Welcome into the BBP2 in our second Inquirer Bengals podcast of the week. Every Thursday during the season, we'll bring you more specific game preview insight from players and your Cincinnati.com beat writers. But that's only the beginning. Every week, we'll bring you Paul Dougherty's hot seat with our guest on Beyond the Stripes, our advanced analytics conversation with the team at Pro Football Focus, as well as a Throwback Thursday interview with a voice from Bengals past. All right, let's go. All right, welcome into the BBP2, the Deuce. We are back at you after a couple of days away. It's time to officially turn our attention to Bengals v. Steelers. It's gonna be a wild one.
Yeah,
as so, always.
Yeah. I'm just giggling because I wanted to ruin your open again with BBP2. Deuce.
We can't go there every time, and we probably shouldn't have even gone there the first time. Well, you know, I mean, we're trying to be reputable. Yeah. We're trying to be reputable and
we are.
And
you are
professional.
No, you are. Let's get it clear. Paul's trying to be real professional. Me, not.
I'm not
so much.
I'm not used to good mood, Jim. This is you're in a good mood today.
I am in a good mood.
You got your big coffee. You're happy. I like it. Well, let's calm down on getting too happy with good mood, Jim. Let me run down what we got for you, BBP2. Of course, we're gonna spend the next 15-20 minutes previewing Bengals and Steelers. Then I'm going to bring you the hot seat, Paul Dougherty's hot seat with Tyler Boyd from Tuesday's Beyond the Stripes, which was good. A really interesting story with him talking about the reaction of the community when his house caught on fire. It was gutted, basically. So that, stick around for that. We'll have my conversation with Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus. We discussed what the heck happened to the Bengals offensive line and how some of the things that they can do off of that going forward against the Steelers. And then Throwback Thursday this week was really a fan favorite when he was here, in my opinion. Cedric Benson, always interesting to talk to. It's been a while since I recorded that. So I don't even remember what we talked about, tell you the truth, but I do remember immediately being done and telling you, Jim, that was really good. Sed is just a super interesting guy, retired now from the league, obviously. You actually covered him for a little bit in Green Bay.
Yeah, he briefly in Green Bay. My first year there was one of his years and was definitely not a fan favorite up there because I think the game had kind of left him. He was sort of transitioning into the DJ Sed Benson role. I think he got a little more headlines for that at that point. But he was great to talk to, no longer a factor really on the field. But no, I enjoyed it. He was a go-to for me in that locker room, Paul, because frankly, in Green Bay, they just don't like their guys being available. And Sed, being a veteran at that point, I don't really care.
Yeah,
I'm here. I'll talk.
Yeah, and he is very worldly. Lots of different opinions. Really interesting. Just a really interesting guy. Always really enjoyed talking to him, and that was certainly the case again. Chatting with him on Throwback Thursday. So that'll be at the end of this podcast. But first, so let's get into Bengals and Steelers specifically. You shipped up to Pittsburgh this week.
I did.
Because we kind of sat and we talked about it. Even on the last podcast, and said, well, what the hell are we going to do here? What are we going to say that these guys don't want to say, and B, no one's going to be saying anything? So we kind of thought, it would be a unique perspective to come in from the other side and what they think. What do they feel about these guys? And what'd you dig up?
Yeah, it was interesting, Paul. It was a lot of the same, at least on the surface. So whereas Marvin was very quick to say new year, new team, new season, their mantra was it's AFC North. Browns, Bengals, Ravens are all the same, and they just AFC North. That was it. I mean, you have two T-shirts here, new season in the AFC North.
Yep.
Now, fortunately, I was able to talk to a handful of those guys, some principal players, Ramon Foster, Marquise Pouncey, and then the always lovable Mike Mitchell. alone, one-on-one. And actually, they were all really good, very complimentary of the Bengals' front office and how they draft. They really very complimentary of Andy Dalton and A.J. Green. But interestingly, Paul, the conversation turned towards to the familiarity and the continuity being the reason that this rivalry has turned the way it has and what they view it as sort of a media exaggeration. I mean, none of them were going to deny penalties or hard hits or things like that, but they were just like, look, we've played these dudes twice a year for 5, 6, 7, or in the case of Witt and James Harrison, 10 years. Even Michael Johnson was like, I never thought of it that way, where it's like the same guys. That rarely happens in the league. And the thought there's no animosity, no hatred. It's just you see these guys all the time.
Yeah.
And you have. Mm-hmm. And that's why it looks the way it does. And even to an extent, the Bengals players agreed with that.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's odd. In the NFL turns over so much. I mean, at most teams from year to year, you don't recognize them because there's so many things. The quarterbacks maybe stay the same and a few of the key players,
right.
But there's so much turnover. But with these clubs, you could throw in a few others that believe in like the continuity and homegrown. It's the same coaches. It's the same play. It really is. I mean, more so than anywhere. And then you throw in just the way the division is.
Right.
And then you have a playoff game.
Right.
And you have a lot of trash talk and you have paint your boy on South Beach and that stuff.
That was the one thing. Honestly, Paul, if there was a connecting line, the Bengals players and the Steelers players both said the social media thing after the first game was a problem.
Yep.
Was a change. And now they both said, look, there's 106 players, you know, on the 53s. Not everyone's going to like each other. Both kind of admitted off, like, I'm sure there's guys on our team they hate. I'm sure there's guys on their team that hate us. But for the most part, like, Carlos Dunlap lived with Marquise Pouncey at Florida. These buddies with Gilbert. George Iloka and Mike Mitchell are really good friends. They work out together. I mean, a lot of these guys share agents. They go to the same off-season stuff. So even Witt said with James Harrison, he's like, we are going to really, really hit each other hard. But after the game, I'm going to go up to him and talk to him about his kids and give him a hug and say, hey, you know, see you at the next one.
Yeah.
So so the social media thing, I think they acknowledge was a little ridiculous.
It turned it personal.
Yeah. But on balance, when you're talking about 92 active players, yes, a couple can really change the tenor, but in their view, it's really just because they all know each other so well, schematically. Marvin Lewis said the other day that that defense has been the same since 1993.
Since he was there, yeah.
I mean, they just know it. Even George Iloka said, he's like, it's purely physical. They know where I'm going to be. I know where they're going to be. So how do you win? Be more physical.
Right. And that's when people get pissed off at each other because they're trying to manhandle each other. You know, this game, it's really interesting the way the Bengals have been so good at stopping Antonio Brown. And, you know, Antonio Brown just tears it up, of course, as he has. I mean, you know, it was more of the same against the Redskins. But he's done that to everybody except this team. These guys, you know, whether it's what Paul Gunther has worked up against him or it's the personnel or combination of the two, they have found a way to stop Antonio Brown. And so, the Steelers, I'm sure, will do the same to A.J. Green and dare Brandon LaFell and Tyler Boyd to beat him. And the Steelers will be dared to have, whether it's Marcus Wheaton or all their other pieces, Sammy Coates, whatever, those guys, dare them to beat you, you know? And so it's going to be really interesting to see this game because it's going to be two teams that are going to say, your star receivers, who maybe had the two best weeks in football last year, last week, and are two of the best in all of football anyway, are not going to be the ones right. to beat them. They have a history of stopping that. And it's going to so much going to come down to those other guys. There's a lot of new guys because Pittsburgh lost Martavis Bryant, yeah. And you know, they've got a lot of new guys. Yep. And they won't have Le'Veon Bell. No Heath Miller anymore. They got Jesse James out there playing tight. I mean, Jesse James and C.J. Uzomah were two guys in the back half of some drafts
yeah.
that we haven't heard much from, and they're going to be playing major roles. Yeah. It's very similar the way the offenses are entering this game.
Right. Yeah, especially the those secondary receivers and guys who – you know, the general public may not aware for all that talk of just continuity, that's are the elements of both teams that have flipped and changed, where you're like, who are these guys?
Yeah.
You know? Although I guess Tyler Boyd at least understands what the rivalry is. Maybe Eli Rogers does to a point if he paid attention at Louisville or not. But it's interesting. And I Antonio Brown is fascinating because you're right. The Bengals have managed to bottle him up, if you will. Yet Pittsburgh wins those games. You know, the only games that they've Antonio Brown's only seen three losses as a member of the Steelers against the Bengals, and he scored twice in two of those. But it comes in the second half. It's really interesting in our game day section this week. People could see in the second half of those games, him and Ben have fallen off rhythm, and he's only averaged less than 4 yards a catch in the second half. No touchdowns. Hard to say. There's no, you know, those are over the years, three games over the years, so it could be coincidental.
Yeah.
I don't know, but you're right. They've done a good job, and yet somehow Pittsburgh wins those games. It's
yeah,
interesting.
I mean, I go back to the finale in 2014 when the Bengals were charging back, and it looked like you were seeing Andy Dalton's breakthrough moment, and then all of a sudden he throws a pass into Steelers territory to A.J. Green. Mike Mitchell hits him, concussion, fumble. Two plays later, Antonio Brown's running past Drake Kirkpatrick for a touchdown, and everything changes. and that's just the way that's the way it goes, you know,
right.
that where it's going to come down to who's going to make a play like that. But he has these – and then the punt returns, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, over the years, you've had tons of those. But, the stars are eventually going to make the difference, but I think the other guys are going to decide who's in the position to win at the end. I don't know. How do you – I've got my ideas, but I'm curious how you view that this game is going to play out.
Well, I at the start of the year, you know, I predicted, if you will, an 0-2 start. I thought they'd lose in Pittsburgh. And while I'm very impressed with their victory in New York, I thought both the offense and defense were really resilient. I think Ben Roethlisberger is – way better than Ryan Fitzpatrick. I think Antonio Brown's way better than Brandon Marshall.
You're really going on a limb there.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I think Chris Boswell is way better than Nick Folk even.
Yeah.
And I just think while I expect Paul Gunther's defense and that familiarity we talked about to create issues, I think the Steelers capitalize in areas where the Jets just couldn't. Now, I don't know if the Steelers will get 5 red zone opportunities. They may only get 3, but I also could see them scoring 3 touchdowns. So I think that the Bengals lose 28-20, and to me that's a 1-possession game. That means that if the Bengals win 13-7, I wouldn't be shocked. But
yeah.
It's just I just think that we're still too early. You mentioned those other young guys and LaFell and Boyd and CJ. Maybe Tyler Croft is more into the passing attack. I think this running game and the offensive line for the Bengals, there's just some stuff that still needs to come together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it will. It's just that this week, you know, if they were playing Cleveland, I think it's a win. I think they're just playing another playoff team that is better than the one they played last week.
I think this is exactly what we talked about in the season preview. Your defense has to carry you through these early weeks. And – you know, last week the defense did enough to carry them through, barely. And then A.J. Green dominated Darrelle Revis. But this week, it's your defense really needs to. I mean, it needs to do what it did in the playoff game.
Yeah,
which was only allow one, not really touchdown.
Right.
And and keep them to field goals and keep it low scoring, because it's the only way. You know, Wednesday's walkthrough, I went through and broke down the wins the Bengals have had at Heinz Field. They're 3-4 in the last seven. The three wins have been a total points number, average total points of 26. In the four losses, total points average between the two teams, 43. Pittsburgh wins when the ball starts throwing around and points start getting thrown up in the air. The Bengals win when they turn it into a low-scoring, defensive slugfest. And that's the type of game that their defense has to create. Geno Atkins, Carlos Dunn, you've seen it before. I mean, everybody that has followed this team for any amount of time has seen this happen, where Geno and Carlos and Michael Johnson, those guys are just terrorizing. Ben's holding it long because he's trying to get in, and they end up throwing him down for 5-6 sacks and just slow him down and keep Antonio Brown. And then you see 18 million catches for what was Heath Miller, now it would be Jesse James, on 5-yard dump-offs.
Right.
Just check and make them check everything down to the tight end. You'll see that again. I'm sure that's their strategy this week.
Right.
You can't let it get out of hand. The second you start shooting out and trying to like catch up and you're spreading it and you're throwing it, you're playing right into Pittsburgh's hands and it's over in their house.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be the tempo and the type of game, I think, is going to go a long way to determining if the Bengals can win. I don't think right now that they're going to stop that Pittsburgh offense from getting out a little bit. I just there's just a lot of weapons happening there.
Yeah.
And Ben's really good. It'll be interesting to see. I'm with you. I have Pittsburgh winning by a field goal, like 26-23. But hey, good for Bengals fans, love hearing that.
Yeah.
Cuz we missed on it last week.
Yeah.
So.
And I can't, you know, I'm you know, remember last year I just destroyed you in the season predictions.
What are you talking
about?
I'm
helping you, like,
that is not that is not how it went down. That is not how it went down. All I know was in the season predictions last year, I had them winning the division and losing in the first round to the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
What'd you have?
I had them winning a playoff game. I had the week-to-week predictions. Like, I totally owned you on that, I think.
At the end of the year, there were a couple that were – there was, I think, one or two that were different. And I think you maybe did end up on top, and that's fine. All I know in the big picture, I was one game off of the final record. I had them 11-5, winning the division and losing the Steelers in the first round. I will take that. So don't go play in that game. I don't like that. Happy Jim over here gloating and stuff. Happy Jim's the worst Jim. I feel like
I'll find something to be mad about.
I feel like we switched today. I'm all mad about stuff and you're all happy. You're the one that was on the road all day yesterday.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is. All right, so we kind of covered the basics of it. Again, we'll be up there in Pittsburgh. So make sure you check out websitescincinnati.com. We'll have all your coverage there. Get the Bengals app. We've got all your push alerts, and so you can keep up with everything that's going on, your game cast, and, you know, keep you up to date. So if you're sitting there and you're not able to watch the game, you can just go on. We've got the game running live there, or you can go on to our page site, and we'll have all our tweets and everything that we're talking about and updates on the scores all right there. So you can get all that if you need it. Looking forward next on Tuesday, Beyond the Stripes at Hofbräu House, 7:00. Carlos Dunlap's going to be our guest. That's going to be a great show. Unbelievably, we've never had Carlos before.
Yeah.
Tried all last year to get Carlos. He had lots of stuff going. He was getting a massage on Tuesdays. Yeah. Like, Tuesdays was his massage day.
Yeah.
That always got in the way. And I told him, bring the massage table. We will talk to you while you're getting your massage.
Yeah.
So we don't know if the massage table's coming with him this time, but Carlos Dunlap will definitely be there. So come on down to Hofbräu House, 7:00. Check it out or watch on Cincinnati.com. Looking forward to that. So anyway, well, we're going to get you into the extras now. So upcoming here is the hot seat with Paul Docherty and Tyler Boyd from Tuesday. My PFF conversation with Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus. And then a throwback Thursday, throwing it way back with Cedric Benson talking about life. So anyway, enjoy it and have a good one. It is time for the hot seat. Paul Docherty, you are up.
Tyler Alexander Boyd. You're on the hot seat. You grew up, as we said, in Clairton, Pennsylvania, which is a steel mill town that, frankly, has seen better days, like lots of steel mill towns. Give me a one-word description of Clairton, Pennsylvania.
Since it's so little, you know, low poverty, but it stays in one. Everybody stays together, so I want to say strong.
Small.
Strong.
Strong, okay. Yeah. You were raised by a mom who would not let you fail. Tell us a little bit about Sonya Payne. Very independent woman, you know, like I mentioned, strong. You got to be strong coming out of that community. Real hard worker, did a lot of things, you know, worked several jobs to make sure me and my brother was always right and always got what we wanted. You know, so she was always dedicated to us no matter what, and she always showed love. Did sports in some way save your life? Definitely. You know, like I mentioned earlier, you know, it's a low poverty city in Clareton. It's really two routes, directions that you can go, and it's sports or hitting the streets. And like I mentioned, my mom did a great job of raising us, of just keeping us on the right path, either if I was going to make it in sports or just get an education. You know, she wanted me to continue my legacy in school and just stay on the right path, stay positive.
Speaking of sports and your mom and things that happened in your life, talk about what happened over the Christmas holidays in 2011 when you were playing in a basketball game only a few blocks from your house.
You know, I remember that like it was yesterday. It was my senior year. I can't quite remember who was playing, but we was in a basketball game, and midway in the fourth quarter, my coach subbed me out and told me that my house had caught on fire. And I'm like, what? That can't be. It's not possible. And then I looked in the stands, and my mother and my family, you know, wasn't there, so I knew it was legit. So I ran off, raced in the locker, got there, and sure, but no, it was on fire. You know, I believe it was electrical fire. You know, we didn't know what to do. We felt at our lowest point again, you know, but like I mentioned, the community is real strong, and they all are supporters, and we had a foundation get put together, and the guys and the people in the community donated money to us to help us, you know, get some of the things that we couldn't get that was lost in the fire. So I was real thankful for them and real blessed to have people like that around me.
I'm going to read from a story here because this is pretty spectacular. It says, the town's youth football president quickly sought out your mom, offering an empty room in a building he owned only a few houses down from your previous home, right?
Yep.
The youth league's vice president helped set up a bank account for donations, while local businesses in Clareton and up and down the Monongahela turned tip jars into donation buckets. Raffles were held. Rival high schools chipped in. Your mom says, we were truly blessed because in a month's time, and your place was gutted from the inside, right? In a month's time, it was like we never had the fire. Now, what did that fire and how people responded to it teach you about life that you will never forget?
Just, you know, it's always ups and downs. You know, you will find yourself at the highest peak, or you feeling good, everything is flowing right. Then one day or something might affect that, and you can be at your lowest point. So just cherish life, you know, and just continue to build your legacy. You know, the weak can only make you stronger. So that's what we fed on. You know, even though we caught that fire, I had so much fire built up in me, I didn't really know what to do, you know. But like I mentioned, my mother's so good and so wonderful at what she does. She made sure I kept my head on straight just to keep going day by day and just go from there.
And then you went to Pitt partly because of the loyalty that you felt you had to show in return to the loyalty that was showed you.
For sure. You know, like you mentioned, so many supporters that I had, you know, it was hard to run from that. You know, regardless if they were fans or my friends, they still respected me and what I have came from and what I have accomplished.
Now, you don't speak like the normal Pittsburgh guy speaks. You know what I'm talking about? I'm going to give you a few definitions, and you're going to tell me how to pronounce the word in Pittsburghese, all right?
Yep.
What is the Pittsburghese word for, like, a small stream of water?
Oh,
it's mostly white folks. It's black. I know you guys know how to pronounce words. The white people in Pittsburgh, I got a ton of relatives in Pittsburgh. They don't say creek. They say, come on now.
I can't even remember.
Crick.
Crick.
Like you got
that.
Something and, wrong with your neck.
Like a, yeah.
All
like
right. Now, what about the place in the city that's got most of the people and the shopping and all that stuff. What area of the city is that in Pittsburghese? I can't believe I got to help you with this.
People call it so much. We'll just call it the Berg.
No, how about downtown?
Or downtown, right.
Downtown.
Right. Downtown.
We're going downtown. How about the expression for you people?
Yens. That's definitely
yens.
A go-to.
That's it. Yens.
I knew I don't know that one.
Very good. We, you
yens
know.
Is always a go-to.
Can you name me, see if you know your Pittsburgh history, name me three quarterbacks that came from right in your area?
Dan Marino.
Yep.
Joe Namath.
Joe Namath, yeah.
There you go, brother. Good job.
Every time I get on the spot, I just lose my whole train of thought.
Jim Kelly?
Jim Kelly.
How about Joe Montana?
That's who I was thinking about.
He's
the
pretty
original.
Good.
Yeah.
Did you ever heard of a guy named Johnny Unitas?
No. Anybody way before?
You're showing your youth now, my friend. give me a couple other names, because I got a whole bunch of them here. How many other guys from Pittsburgh made it in the NFL and made it big? You played against one the other day.
Revis.
There you go.
Fitzgerald, another receiver, great.
Larry Fitzgerald. You follow him at Pitt. Broke all his freshman records.
Who else do we got?
Guy we were just talking about in the break. My wife went to high school with who we were talking about.
Revis?
Tony Dorsett.
Oh, Tony Dorsett.
She wishes she went to high school with Revis. Might be a little bit younger. Curtis Martin.
Curtis Martin.
You heard of him?
Yep.
Ty Law.
Ty Law.
All right. How about Harry Theophilides? You ever heard of him?
Nah, I ain't never heard of him.
How about Fred Cox?
Yeah, I heard of him before.
No, you haven't. Sounds like the guy that delivers your mail. You heard of him?
I heard of his name, but I don't know him.
He's a kicker, Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, I heard of his name.
How about Paul Martha?
Nope.
How about Carlton Chester Gilchrist, better known as Cookie?
Nope.
Oh, man. He was the old AFL guy. Remember the AFL?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. how about one of the greatest names for quarterback ever, Willie Thrower?
Willie Thrower. Heard of the name, but I don't.
Willie Thrower was the first African-American quarterback in the NFL. They said he could throw the ball 70 yards.
Probably further than that.
All right. Can you beat A.J. Green in ping pong?
Definitely.
Definitely?
Definitely.
Is there anybody who can't beat A.J. Green in ping pong?
Jimmy Wright.
I know that Ray Maluga probably can't beat him because I beat Ray Maluga in there one day. If your career ended tomorrow, what would you do the rest of your life?
I left school early after my junior year. I definitely want to continue to finish that. You know, hopefully come out, I want to get my business degree, start our own company, get a training facility or some sort, you know. But I just typically come up with my own business just to continue what I want to do, what I like in terms of football-related things.
You thought that one out.
Yeah.
Money or friends?
But definitely friends, you know, because I'm loyal, and I got a small circle in there. They're very loyal to me, you know, so I would definitely choose them over money.
Fame or privacy?
Definitely privacy. You know, you don't like the... have everybody in your business. You know, it's okay to come to events like this, but definitely privacy.
All right. Do you put ketchup on your scrambled eggs?
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Do you routinely open car doors for women?
Not all the time, but nice occasions. We go out, I do it, but we're just getting in and out. Just go ahead.
Do you do dishes?
Sometimes.
Yeah?
When nobody home. If it's just me home, I ain't got no choice.
Do bugs scare you?
Not really.
No bugs?
Nah.
What about, like, animals, rodents, bats, snakes, stuff like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, what?
Like, bigger items. Snakes.
Snakes.
No, I don't really like snakes.
What is... Now, you're going to need to know this one because you're going to be famous and you're going to get a few of these. What is an accept, right?
Say this again?
You're going to be famous, right?
Yeah.
All right. What's an acceptable reaction when someone walks up to you and says, you suck?
just that right there, just laughing in the face.
Very good. What do you watch on TV, if anything?
I love Power. You know, that's one of the TV shows I love to watch.
The what? What is it?
It's called Power.
Power?
Yeah.
I don't know that. Do we know Power? Is that a young person's thing?
Yeah. Darrell yeah. Revis might know what it is.
Darrell might, but I don't. Yeah. Neither is my wife. If you could go back in time to one specific moment in history, what would it be?
9/11.
Really?
Yeah.
I heard Marvin took you guys over there, right?
Yeah, we went over there and visited.
How was that?
It was awesome. Yeah. You know, it was my first time actually going to New York.
Yeah.
You know, just to seeing that and the support with the names around the stones, you know, for the memories of those people who lost their lives. You know, it meant so much. Big headlines in the world, you know. So if that would have changed, I thought life would be so much and a lot different.
I thought him taking you guys there was one of the coolest things he's ever done.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't expect it to look as amazing as it did.
Yeah. Yeah. Last question. Do you have any questions for me?
What do you think the score is going to be this coming Sunday?
Now, see, he didn't ask me who I thought was going to win. So I'm off the hook with that one, right? Just what the score is going to be?
Just give me a score.
I like about 31-27.
Bengals?
You didn't ask me that. And you are off the hot seat. Thank you, my friend.
Let's hear it
so
for
much.
Tyler Boyd.
All right, welcome inside the Pro Football's Focus. Nope. All right, welcome inside the Pro Football Focus Studios down on Main Street and over the Rhine. It is time for Bengals in Focus. I'm your Bengals beat writer for the Saint Inquirer, Paul Daner Jr., here with lead analyst for Pro Football Focus, Steve Pelizzola. Steve, let's talk a little bit about the opening game win by the Bengals, but the Bengals win 23-22, and there's lots of celebrating, but it wasn't perfect in a lot of ways. And you know, you guys do such a good job of diving into, particularly into line play and what happens in the trenches. You know, fans watch and say, I don't know what went wrong, but something went wrong because Andy Dalton was sacked 7 times, most he's ever been sacked in his career. So the question is, when you guys dug into the numbers of this game and looked at the plays, what went wrong on the offensive line? Who is to blame? Someone must be blamed, right?
It's rarely just one guy. It was an ugly all-around effort, but, you know, 7 sacks. Look, 2 of them we put on Andy Dalton and or coverage. You know, he had to leave, he left a clean pocket or the coverage was too good. So let's say only 5. Are attributed to the offensive line. But Russell Bodine at center, he's the guy that was the culprit on at least 3 of them. The first one, he didn't get directly attributed the sack as far as a stat goes, but he got bull rushed into Dalton, forced him to leave the pocket. He got tracked down. Another one on a screen. You know, a screen, you're trying to give up some of the pass, it was a little bit of pass rush, but gave up far too much. Another sack. And then the last one was ugly. Let the defender cross his face. Andy Dalton comes out of the play action, and he's got a defender right in his face for the sack. So 3 on Bodine, essentially, and then 2, you know, Kevin Zeitler and Cedric Ogboihe on the right side, both dealing with stunts. They both got beat on stunts. So are they correctable issues? Potentially, but definitely an ugly week one outing for the O-line.
Yeah, we talk about Russell Bodine in the center play. This has been a thing for a couple of years. You guys have had him rated towards the bottom of your grades amongst all centers here now since he's coming in the league. He started his first year 2014, and Paul Alexander said to us right during draft time, I'm sick of the witch hunt on Russell Bodine, but that's because there needs to be a step in the right direction. This was kind of more of what we've seen from him, it seemed, from the last couple of years, where there's been these occasional games where it just hasn't gone well.
Yeah, and you know, at the center position, centers just don't give up a whole lot of pressure. You might see the best centers in the league give up 10, maybe 15 pressures in the season. So he gave up 2 direct sacks, 2 other hurries, 4 in one game. That's just not a great game at center. And then in the run game, he gives up a little bit too much ground sometimes. So we'd like to see a little bit better play out of him.
It's looking forward and spinning this to the Steelers. You talk about, okay, they've got correctable issues. The point is, you guys have had these guys graded as a line in general very high as far as pass rush efficiency in recent years. I mean, so that's one game probably isn't a reason to be concerned when you look at the totality of what they've done in recent years where they've been very good, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talk about the quick passing game, getting the ball out of Dalton's hands. You know, they did a really good job with the run-pass option game. That's a great way to protect the offensive line. They're essentially run-blocking, giving Dalton the ability to pull and throw the ball. Those types of plays will keep defenses off balance and hopefully keep the pass rush off them. But against a really good Jets defensive line, that's part of what it was. Leonard Williams dominating and a strong, you know, Muhammad Wilkerson, strong Jets defensive line. That was a big part of the reason, you know, they gave up the 7 sacks as well.
How much run-pass option as far as just straight snaps? What did the Bengals have, maybe compared to other teams? Is that more than you've seen elsewhere? Are they? I mean, there's obviously a trend of a lot of that happening more in the league, certain teams more than others, whether you're talking about Chip Kelly's system or whatever. But where did they kind of fall on the line of that?
I don't have the exact numbers, but definitely toward the top. You know, you see Aaron Rodgers with Green Bay do it just a little bit. You mentioned Chip Kelly. But Dalton just has such a good quick release, and it feels like they're getting a little bit more aggressive with it even this season. You know, they have those plays where they'll, you know, those trick plays where they'll throw the tackles outside, and you can throw the screen either way too. So there's a lot of creativity with Cincinnati's offense that I think can help, especially if they don't trust the offensive line going forward.
Absolutely. Maybe a little bit of a wrinkle of what Ken Zampezi is going to start putting a little bit more into the system. Well, Steve, thank you very much for joining us, breaking down the O-line, calling out the culprits. Who was the ones that were at fault for the 7 sacks? The Bengals will try to fix that going forward. Remember, Andy Dalton only sacked 20 times all of last year in his game, so a rarity to see that from them. They'll hope to fix it at Pittsburgh on Sunday, and we'll talk to you about that game next week.
I want to bring in Cedric Benson, who was a first-round pick back in 2005, number 4 overall. Of course, with the Bengals from 2008 to 2011. Signed a 2-year contract to come back in 2009, and it all worked out. Recorded first of 3 straight 1,000-yard rushing seasons. Set a Bengals franchise record with 6 games over 100 yards rushing in that incredible 2009 season with so many comebacks. Left the team for the Packers in the final season of 2012 and suffered an injury and has retired since then. Well, first of all, Cedric, great to have you on board. How are things in Austin, Texas?
Good, man. Thanks for having me. Things are good. You know, doing a lot of outdoor activities for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you kind of moved on and you transitioned into the mortgage lending game. How did you get into that?
Yeah, absolutely. Mutual friend of mine. We shared accounts. We were able to kind of get in contact, and through that connection, I gravitated towards the mortgage industry, see how I'd like it, and, you know, found a niche that I can work with, and, you know, kind of early into it for me, you know, just getting my feet wet, and it's been an interesting ride. It's been fun.
Yeah, it's always interesting trying to figure out the next step when you step out of the game. I mean, did you have something like this in mind, or when you kind of stepped away, were you did it still kind of take some time to figure out what direction you wanted to go into?
Yeah, well, you know, my career kind of coming to a halt wasn't never really my choice. You know, I'm curious as to know, you know, how many players this actually happens to. But I had no idea that the end of my career was happening or was coming. So I was totally blindsided by that. And so it's been a little bit of time for me, taking a little time for me to kind of, you know, figure out where I was going to go, because I, you know, totally wasn't ready to move on, you know.
Yeah, it's a tough thing, especially when it's injuries. You never expect. You think you're going to continue playing football on and on, you know, when you're not slowing down and things are going well, and then all of a sudden, the nature of that game, man, one injury, and all of a sudden you have a lot of decisions to make.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, let's kind of jump into it. I want to go back to start off sort of in actually going back a couple years before this to that 2009 team that you were such a huge part of, you know, arguably the best season you had it during your career, the 6 100-yard games I mentioned earlier. How much after that year, because you lose the Jets in the first round of the playoffs that year, a game where you had 169 yards rushing, kept the team around, How much after that year was there an expectation that, boy, next year things are really moving in the right direction, and did the anticipation start to build even just after that?
You know, I think the reality of having such an awesome season and losing to the Jets in the first round, you know, to a team that we should have beat, no doubt. How you end your season kind of sets a precedent for how you will begin your next season, or move into the second season. Honestly, you take that situation, you can't ignore that. We had an awesome day on the ground. Defense played decently well. We had some mistakes, you know, later in the game that we should have opportunities to win the game, and we lost it. And I think that didn't give us enough spunk going into the next season. I think, that team had a lot of different personalities, and I think that may have affected a lot of the substantial growth of that team going to trying to propel from that type of, you know what I mean, that awesome season, you know, to continue to grow from that. You have to, everybody has to be on the same page and be serious about that type of thing. And I think there was a focus lost in between those playoffs and that next season, you know.
Yeah. Hey, one thing that I remember specifically was my first year covering a team in 2010 was just the massive crowds at training camp and this sort of high, and a lot of that had to do with Terrell Owens was there. People were excited about that. I mean, that there was just a hype and an expectation in that camp and leading up to that 2010 season that was more than I can remember. Is that how you viewed it? There was just so much hype around that team?
Yeah. I mean, the who we were in 2009 was not who we were in 2010. You know, we had different players that you know, and they had as the fans had expectations, they had expectations. You can't, win a lot of games on expectations. You know?
Yeah, so, that's what kind of came down.
That's nail in the coffin.
Yeah.
That's nail in the coffin right there, man. Yeah, football is a pretty awesome game because it's very obvious, you know. Especially if you're a coach and you're part of the thing, you know everything what's going on. It's very obvious to know why things may not be going right. Very obvious to know why things may not be going, you know, as they should be or as expected. You know, football is very telling.
Yeah. Is it, you know, after that year and when people will go back and talk about what went wrong that year, a lot of blame is piled on to T.O. and Chad. You know, how much of that is warranted, or do you think they were sort of unfairly cast as villains on that team and what happened?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know. I'm sure they took it as much as they could and ran with it as well, you know. And granted, they're not calling the plays and they're not in control of every aspect of the game, you know, they're in control of themselves. But I think it took away from, you know, the closeness of the team, you know?
Yeah. I mean, people, we talk in the media a lot about distractions. I mean, how much does stuff like that actually distract? I mean, is that a real thing that can bring an entire locker room down? Things like, you know, just general distractions, like, you know, the havoc your receivers have in a TV show or stuff like that.
All that is fine so long as, you know, it's handled like a professional. I mean, like, when you're a team, you're like one unit. So, like, if I have a TV show, then in a sense, all my guys got a TV show too. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
In a way, you know, of course, you can't bring them all along, but in a way, you got to make everybody a part of the, you know, you just make your oneness, your unit, as part of like everything that's going on. It's hard to explain because, you know, you can't take a guy who has a show and bring everybody on the show and nothing like that. But I think when you include them, it's a way to include them without actually physically having them there in your show and stuff, or in your whatever, you know, media extravaganza you got going on.
You understand
what I'm saying? Like if
absolutely.
I'm in front of the camera a lot and I'm talking about team and I'm talking about, you know, the guys and I'm talking about, you know, the O-line and things we can do and I'm including, you know, everybody and almost individually giving everybody a shine and what they got to do in their job and their aspect. You know, if I'm making it about football and about winning games, then that's what happens.
Yep. And then that year when winning games didn't happen, I think it was easier to put the spotlight on those guys because they're the ones that were out there. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
In reality, it was a 10-game losing streak where every loss was more unbelievable because they were all so close. And it was like, I mean, you couldn't believe how it was happening because you had this team with all this talent. And you know, you guys were right there every week, and just every week it was a way where you're like, wow, that was like they should have won that game or could have won that game. But that's the thing that just starts to spiral downhill, you know, which kind of brings us to where you get to the reboot portion of this. And I don't know how much, you know, how close you were with Carson or anything like that, but did you get any sense during that 2010 season that he was considering making the move that he did, or did that whole situation as it played out take you by surprise?
No, I mean, you didn't get a sense that he was leaving, but you also didn't get a sense that he was staying, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was very neutral, you know. But at the same time, of course, you know, yeah, we had a lot going on now that I think about it, man. I mean, geez, you know, Carson and, you know, T.L., Chad, like, it was a lot of stuff going on that I think about during that period. We had a lot of great young up-and-comer players who were eager to play some football. We just had a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
But, yeah, never a sense either way, you know.
Yeah. Was there, I don't know, inside, you know, when everyone's gone and inside the locker room, how much discussion about future of a coach is, but was there ever wondering, because there was those days after the season ended where there were about 2-3 days where nobody knew if Marvin was going to come back or if he was going to re-sign or what was going to happen. Was there a lot of wondering amongst coaches about players about that, or was that something that you guys just stayed out of?
Yeah, that was in the air as well. You know, me personally, I mean, of course, I try my best to stay out of it, but I can't go without saying it wasn't talked about or brought up, you know. It's fair to say there were a lot of distractions at that time.
Yeah, and that's part of, you know, it's funny because since then Marvin has never had to go into a lamed up gear. They've always made sure they did extensions ahead of time because that is something that is on players' mind because you're wondering, is this coach going to be here? And is he going to be the guy that next year is going to be trying to continue developing? And there's something to be said for that kind of continuity, for sure. You stuck around. Now, there was a lot of players that weren't around in 2011 when everything restarted. I mean, I specifically remember a conversation with you that in 2011 in Georgetown where you had stayed, and I think you had talked to like a family of four after a practice for about 10 minutes or something. And you just said, well, I just talked to them because I don't know where all the rest of our fans went, right? Because there was no one there.
Uh-huh.
How crazy was that, the difference between 2010 and 2011 where you know, you couldn't have been further on the opposite end of the spectrum?
Yeah. I probably somewhat enjoyed it, you know. At the end of the day, you know, I'm a – beginning and end of the day, I'm there to play football, you know, and all the fans, support, and followings and things like that kind of come along with the nature of the business. But playing football is fun, you know, especially when, you know, you can just play football. So,
yeah. Marvin now. Things,
you know,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Marvin now talks, he talks a lot about changing the way that they did business that
over that lockout and that off season and the types of players that they would invest in. You know, guys, mm-hmm. they would take character more into play and care more about making sure that part of it in chemistry is taken care of. When you guys returned from the lockout and started going through that next year, how noticeable was that change to you as a player? Was it, or did it sort of feel simple?
Yeah, it became noticeable over the years. Not so much right after we got back, but over the years, I mean, it's been obvious in the types of players they invested in. And to be frank, it's a softer nature of football now. Over the years, it's been obvious to notice whatever changes they were probably addressed during the lockout.
Yeah. So now is it easier to get by without having some of those, you know, when you say it's a softer nature, is it easier maybe for teams to get by now without having the rough around the edges type individuals, you think?
Absolutely, because the game's different. You know, they're throwing the ball a lot more. You know, it's more like a pass catch, don't touch, you know, till, you know what I mean? It's like
yeah.
A, yeah.
Yeah,
it's not football, you know. Slowly picking his way out.
Yeah.
I mean, football is a gridiron sport, you know.
It was
born, you know what I mean. It took a lot to play football, you know, to definitely play running back. You know, you have to be a certain type of personality, it's like a certain type of person, you know, to be able to repeatedly, you know, go in the trench like that. So, and vice versa, but it's definitely a different game.
Fair to say that you kind of wish it was more like the good old days where there was a whole lot more of the actual physical beat up your opponent type football still being played.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's my nature for sure. You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that speaks, you know, seeing that game change and go in that fashion, you can see a lot of other facets of life go that direction as well. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite game from your career that sticks out?
I really love running against the Bears. You know, when we played those guys at home, that was awesome. And I loved coming back and the little preseason game against the Bengals was fun, you know.
Yeah.
The Bears one in particular because, you know, of course, there was some crazy stuff go down, you know, with Chicago, you know, I left. And, you know, teams don't really give you the best report when you go to another team. Why did I know? And it's always come to be false information. But so it was good to get an opportunity to run against those guys to kind of show the owners and old general managers or whatever, whatnot, you know, who they misinterpreted and the misinterpretation they made upon me. And coming back to Cincinnati and playing, it was good because I had just got off the couch. You know, I don't know why I sat out so long that season. Going into the third preseason game, and just to come around the couch and still be, it was a lot of expression to myself to be where I was at that point. I was training on my own with just me and my trainer, Bruce Johnson at Helix. And we was just doing our thing as best we could and trying to imitate, you know, football training to the best we could with what we had. And it was pretty nice to get out there and, you know, see that I was not far from where I needed to be.
And, man, that game against the Bears might be the most dominant half probably. I mean, what was it, 45-10? It was like the final or something. But it was at halftime, it was already over. It was like 35-0 or something. I mean, that might have been the most dominant half in Bengals history.
It was
unforgettable.
Awesome, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, you control, when you play football like that, you control the entire game. The game is yours, you know. Nowadays, you know, kind of with all the throwing and the chances. I mean, yeah, you make big plays, you get down the field fast, but, you know, you don't control the game, you know.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Can happen any time. I mean, the cornerback is a receiver. The receiver is a cornerback. That's two of the same players going against each other usually, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. But Marvin talked to you. He said he got a text from you must have been after you retired, asking about why, you know, he didn't keep you around or something to that effect. What did you make of his response and that sort of back and forth?
Well, I mean, you know, it's always a separation between staff and player.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when the road comes to an end or when something comes about, I mean, granted, agents may know, but yet you don't know because you aren't sitting in on those meetings. You aren't having those one-on-one conversations to have a clear understanding. You know, a lot of players are young. You're young when you come into the league, you know, but, you know, 7-8 years down the road, you know, you grow into a man and you grow into your own understanding. And it comes a point where you have to be treated like a man. And I think, you know, personally for me, I think there's just a, you know, there's a misunderstanding.
Yeah.
You know? That's all.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you want to find closure or understanding as to why things didn't work out or went the way they went. You know, I wasn't in on those, meetings coming back from the lockout that exposed possibly some of those areas where they were going. But that would have been nice to have known, you know, as a man, you know, in your career, you know, you want to try to set yourself best up as to what you're working with, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're not asking to change anything, or they may offer you a position to offer to say your opinion if they ask, but if not, just to be informed so you know how to handle your business best. You know.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, I know it was hard to see an injury cut your career short, but said it was an impressive one, particularly your run here with the Bengals. And I know a lot of Bengals fans I talk to all speak very highly of loving watching you love the rock, particularly during that 2009 season when it was, hey, let's run it 75% of the time and we watch the wins pile up.
It was fun. It was a good time. I love it. Unforgettable.
Absolutely. Well, hey, Ted, man, I really appreciate you joining us here on the podcast. It was great to talk to you again, and best of luck to everything you got going in Austin and elsewhere.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm going to be lending down here. I think we lend in the company I work for, Goldwater Brunswick. I think we lend in 31 states. So I think hopefully Cincinnati and Kentucky is one of mine. And I'm possibly coming up there and doing some business. So.
Well, if you're around, we'd love to catch up with you. Maybe you can make your way over to a practice or a camp or something like that. It'd be great to see you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Heck yeah.